It's Tuesday, which means this is College Football 134, the Covers Podcast, diving into every inch of college football. He is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer. And we have a full weekend of football to react to before we preview week five. Andrew, I suspect right about now is when you want to pledge your life to Oregon State running back Anthony Hankerson.
Yeah, come on. You must have more than that, right? Let's bring it. Lay into me. Come on.
I will remind you of your 1-6 showing when you have a 5-0 week at some point, because you will have a 5-0 week at some point. And then to knock you back down to earth, I'll remind you that in week four, you went 1-6.
You keep me grounded, Doug. I don't know what I would do without you. My head would be so big at all times if you did not exist. Yeah, it was a rough week, but you know, three of the four lines bets we had closing line value, so I think that's going to pay off long term. At one point on Saturday, I thought I was going to win all three of the Tuesday bets on Saturday. Like, it was looking really good. I was like, oh, this is great. We're going to have a great week, and then everything just spiraled. That said, let's preach good bankroll management here. Don't bet what you can't lose. And we're moving forward with the process still intact and with the idea that things are going to turn around quickly for me.
It is rough out there. It's almost as rough as if you are Wyoming or New Mexico and the future of your program is being decided by nearly two dozen other athletic departments. This is, rant time. If I can gripe a little bit about the current realignment chatter, there are actual football games on. We have 3 days of college football coming up. Can we not spend afternoons discussing conference lawsuits and the airfare South Florida is or is not willing to foot on its own and why UNLV is a key to multiple conferences' futures or if Hawaii's standalone time slot is worth TV ratings? Can we, I don't know, Andrew, can we talk about college football, talk about games at hand? Georgia at Alabama, for crying out loud. Yes. Deion Sanders won a game in overtime. I know. I'm being bold asking us to talk about college football. It's a wild thought. But these are the demands of College Football 134, that we talk about actual games and not this realignment nonsense. So with that, I'll take a deep breath and I'll say,
breathe, yes.
let's dive into the biggest storylines from the weekend. Let's rattle off the key podcast verbs. Please, everyone, subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it. Verbs. And then let's talk about Tennessee beating up on Oklahoma. I think every one of our Tennessee thoughts was proven correct. Tennessee winning that game 25-15, in no small part thanks to James Pierce. You, with that late reminder on Saturday, reminding me that, yeah, he's a big piece of this. Tennessee had 11 tackles for loss against Oklahoma. That is he's what changed good. That game in my mind.
Yeah, like you said, I think we had the handicap on this one pretty good. We love Nico. We love this Josh Heupel offense, but we really have to reiterate what you said on Saturday. Please watch on Saturday. The numbers have been great. Really appreciate you guys. But on that Saturday show, you said what makes me like this bet is this defense led by James Pierce. And they held Oklahoma to 3.3 yards per play. It was, I think, 36 yards rushing on 34 carries for Oklahoma. Like, it was ugly. Now, Jackson Arnold will not be the starting quarterback for the Sooners anymore. That's how bad it was. And with this defense there, I think this Tennessee's ceiling is a national championship. That is the ceiling. You want to talk ceilings? Like, they have a pretty clear path. I know they've got Alabama and Georgia on the schedule, but if they are able to split one of those, I can really easily see them in the SEC championship game. They're obviously an odds-on favorite to make the playoff right now. But if this defense is clicking and this offense we know can put up points is able to against some tough SEC opponents, like, ceiling is national championship for me.
I do not disagree. National championship gets lofty, but like you said, if they split those two, they're at least a home field advantage in the first round of the playoff kind of team. If they go 11-1 in the regular season, lose in the SEC title game, they're a 5, 6, 7, 8 seed. That is anybody in that range. We should have the thought that, hey, they might be able to put a few bounces together, and Tennessee is much more than a few bounces. I am very intrigued by them moving forward, and it's because of that defense. Another defense I want to keep singing praise of, even though they lost, I stand by my Michigan doubt. I stand by my USC confidence. Michigan beats USC 27-24, despite Michigan gaining 167 yards on the vast majority of its plays, 157 on the three explosive runs that decided the game. Otherwise, Michigan averaged 3.09 yards per play. They had three quality drives on 12 total possessions, all three entirely dependent on singular explosive rushes. Michigan, you got lucky as far as I'm concerned, and I stand by it.
Oh, yeah. They were talking to Alex Orji. Did you watch after the game, the post game?
No. No, I did breakdown. Not. No.
They had Orji on the set afterwards, and they're like, break down the final drive. And they're like, what? You mean Mullins just running through some of the worst tackling I've seen in college football this year so far? Like, that's all the final drive was. And, yeah, I believe I'm in total agreement with you here. They don't believe in Alex Orji to throw the football still, despite the fact that they made that switch. I think we just kind of realized that maybe that LSU team isn't very good at rushing the football, because I was expecting the USC defense to match that Michigan physicality. They did sometimes, they did, but obviously there were some issues tackling, which creeped back into that game and essentially cost USC that game. But I think you're right. I think we're still in a prime fading of Michigan moving forward this season.
Especially against quality opponents. And I don't have their schedule in front of me. I'm not going to pull it up. But I know they've got that Oregon game. That might be the next chance to really outright doubt Michigan. And I will. I'm not convinced by three explosive rushes by bad USC tackling. For that matter, later on today, I'm gonna continue to endorse that USC defense. I think when you have three bad snaps against a great, like a physical Michigan offense, there's something in there to believe in. And one other big game of the week that we, of all people, need to touch on. Andrew, back in the preseason, you got Utah
pod. This is a Utah pod.
You got them at what, 66-1 to win the national championship?
Correct. 66-1 to win the national championship. My natty pick, the Utah Utes. I'm feeling pretty good about them right now.
Utah beats Oklahoma State 22-19, despite Cam Rising being a game time scratch. Now, anybody who listened to us was not too shocked that Rising did not play Saturday, despite so many indications he would. When journalists say, if your mother tells you she loves you, get a second source, they say it with Kyle Whittingham in mind. The man cannot be trusted. And here we are looking at Utah still beating Oklahoma State, still shutting them down. Oklahoma State had 3 points with 6 minutes left to go in that game. This was a story of Utah's defense.
Yeah, that one is the story of Utah's defense, which is going to just bully everyone in the Big 12. Like we've seen, like I said, feeling pretty confident that they are far and ahead the best team in the Big 12, and it's not that close. Like, they beat the second best team with Isaac Wilson at quarterback. Like they, while the other contender in the conference got manhandled by BYU. Like that's really alarming for everyone else in the conference right now. I think Cam Rising is going to be back sooner than later. I said this like maybe for 6 weeks last season though, too. Yeah. So who knows? I will feel a little less confident in my national championship pick if it is Isaac Wilson down the stretch, obviously. But I don't know. Like I said, this team looks like the best team in the conference. I think they're cruising towards the bye in the first round of the playoff, which just enhances the value there, I think. So, yeah, things looking good for Utah at this point.
Now, what has me surprised, and I mentioned that 66-1. Let's take a futures look real quick. I know we're in late September, folks. It's not usual futures time. Utah is still available at 50-1 to win the national championship at BetMGM. When you are going, like you said, they beat Oklahoma State. Kansas State just got thumped. Utah is pretty prime position to be a favorite in the Big 12 championship game. In other words, Utah is in pretty prime position to be a favorite to getting a first round bye. And that was your argument back in the summer to still get 50-1 on that. I think anybody getting those odds who is in prime position to have a first round bye in the playoff, that is still a value play at 50-1 right now.
I think so too, 100%.
And I look at those Big 12 standings, the next team, like I go through the SP Plus rankings, and who else is high up? Just behind Kansas State and Oklahoma State is Iowa State, who has not played a conference game yet. But Iowa State ends its season at Utah, and then against Kansas State. I don't see anybody getting through the Big 12 with fewer than two losses aside from Utah. Utah is set to be in the conference championship game.
Boy, I just want to say, Ollie Gordon looks really broken. Like this, it needs to be said that he does not. I don't know if there's something in his head about this offseason stuff. Like, it's just for that offensive line to be mostly intact and for him not to be gaining yards like he was. I know Utah is great, but it's been all season. He's averaging less than 3 yards per carry over his last three games.
I'm always inclined to assume Mike Gundy is messing around in September. That's as much as Ollie Gordon looks to be struggling. In my head, it's just I assume Mike Gundy's playing some long game, even though he should no longer play a long game. It's the 12-team playoff reduces that reward. but I have that Mike Gundy doubt just baked into my existence. that's our game four, week four recap. There were obviously other games, but we're not going to have time every week to go through all of them. That's part of why we do the Saturday morning show live at 9 a.m. Eastern. We go through about three dozen games every Saturday morning. So folks, come back around the Covers YouTube and Twitter pages this Saturday morning. Now, before that, we will hit on the biggest games right now. And Andrew, what is the biggest game this weekend? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. Maybe these little schools called Alabama and Georgia going at it. It's just maybe a little bit of impact on the, actually I say that as a joke right now, but Alabama, Georgia probably won't impact the college football playoff much at all. Both teams can lose and will be still odds on favorite to make the playoff. Do you disagree?
Well, first of all, it greatly impacts who would get a bye. Second of all, if whoever takes a loss here, their cushion starts to disappear. If whoever takes this loss, 10-2, you're probably in, but you are not assured that anymore. And that is, and again, let's not downplay this game in those regards. Furthermore, it's Kirby Smart and it's Kalen DeBoer. I'm willing to enjoy this. It is the first time, as our covers Twitter page pointed out, first time Alabama's been home underdog since 2007. For those who not remember, that was Nick Saban's first season. This is a unique kind of game and one that I am willing to get excited for.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be really interesting. I've been seeing that everybody is really enjoying the Kalen DeBoer era in Alabama. Obviously, a different players coach kind of feel that Bama has after all those years of the Nick Saban rule. Obviously, you can't really argue with his results, but good vibes there going on in Alabama right now. I'm really interested to see if this Alabama offense, what it can do against a defense like Georgia, right? Like, we've seen them kind of been a little sketchy for the most part. Like, sure, Milroe has made some explosive plays, but there's been times where they have not looked consistent. So going up against this Georgia defense is going to be a really, really telling game for them. I think this is going to be a very much feel them out kind of Georgia first half. Like, we've seen them play against Clemson, against Kentucky. Obviously that bled over into the second half, but these are two teams that are both in the top 10 of EPA per play on defense. I'm still like, Alabama has been really, really impressive on defense to me as well. Maybe not some of the big name stars like the Will Turners we've seen in the years past, but just balance all over that defense right now. Georgia's still looking for some playmakers to step up. The offense has been lacking that, I would say. So I think this is going to be a bunch of body blows and a bunch of jabs to start off the game. I'm looking at the under first half in this one. I'm a little concerned that DeBoer goes out and says, Milroe, hey, maybe try to let it fly, just attack them right away. But I think Georgia's defense is good enough to combat that. I'll look at the under 24.5 I'm seeing at FanDuel. That's at neg minus 122 right now.
You fainted there for just a moment at what my lean is. You mentioned Georgia's having trouble with these playmakers. And ESPN's David Hale put out a graphic this week charting success rate versus explosive plays. You want to be high in both, obviously. Alabama positions in that chart amid Tennessee and Penn State. Great company right now. Georgia, by the numbers, wasn't that far behind, but its company is Iowa State, Auburn, Pittsburgh, Arkansas. Now let's run through like the SP offense, SP plus offense numbers on there. Alabama with number 3, Tennessee number 9, Penn State number 15. Georgia number 7. Iowa State number 54, Auburn number 35, Pittsburgh number 34, Arkansas number 23. Those are all good offenses, but they're not elite. Georgia's offense might be trading on its 21-23 reputation. And now look, that's a well-earned reputation. You see Uga over my shoulder behind me here. I can draw a direct line from betting on that 2021 title to me sitting here on this podcast today, but we can't lean on the past. I look at this game, I look at the Georgia offensive struggles, and I end up on the Alabama money line plus 110 at DraftKings. Excuse the typo in that ticker. Kalen DeBoer is an excellent offensive coach, and I think he can scheme up enough to put the Georgia offense in a bind. Without Brock Bowers, without Ladd McConkey, Carson Beck has struggled to find a rhythm. Parker Fleming's numbers put Georgia at succeeding in only 37% of its rush attempts, number 103 in the country. That hasn't helped Carson Beck either. Alabama has, by the numbers, the best pass defense in the country to this point in the 2024 season. I know that's against Western Kentucky, South Florida, and Wisconsin. And later on, you'll hear me doubt Bucky. Earlier this year, I pointed out the Bulls had downfield opportunities against Alabama, but the numbers are the numbers, and at some point, we have to lessen the disclaimers and believe in the numbers. Georgia's offensive woes are real. We have seen them. If Kalen DeBoer and Jalen Milroe find a couple of moments, then the Bulldogs are going to be in real trouble, and that's enough for me to take that money line at plus 110.
I also think Ryan Williams is him. Like, I think for a 17-year-old to be doing what he's doing, like, he's a problem. He's a problem. So he's obviously going to get a good test against this Georgia secondary, but you combine him with Milroe's arm and you can have some, create some havoc there.
And that might be all the drama we need this weekend, but of course we will get more drama. Notre Dame gets a rematch, a revenge opportunity against Louisville. Louisville currently a 6-point underdog at Notre Dame. I've been saying it for more than a year now that I think Louisville is rather overrated. Notre Dame does have this revenge opportunity. Last year, that 33-20 loss at Louisville cost Notre Dame his 2023 playoff hopes, and I'd say neutered the Sam Hartman single season in South Bend. So there's a game here of intrigue. If 6-point spread, I don't usually watch Notre Dame these days. I will be watching this one.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me as well. I agree. I think Louisville is still overrated heading into this game. I line this game with Notre Dame favored by at least a touchdown. So I think we're getting some value here with the Irish at home. I know you've ranted in the past that Marcus Freeman does not always cover spreads at home, but I don't know. Louisville is getting some credit here for winning a game and covering a spread that they had maybe a little business covering, but definitely was not trending that way halfway through the fourth quarter when Georgia Tech was looking to kick a field goal and it gets blocked and returned for a touchdown. Like, some of us Georgia Tech bettors were a little devastated by that, of course. But they let Haynes King throw for over 300 yards in that game. This was supposed to be one of the strengths of the team. I know Riley Leonard is most effective when he's running the football, but if he's able to run that football and open things up in the passing game by doing that, then I think he could be a problem. I think Ryan Leonard could be a big problem. This could be maybe his best game as a member of the Irish to this point.
I am inclined to agree with you. You mentioned you take this around a touchdown. I am inclined to agree with you. I am not making any bet yet today because I know I need to dig into it further. I've always said Louisville lives and dies by the explosive plays and unsustainable rate. This season, statistically, the Cardinals are less reliant on those, so maybe I need to temper my thought there. I need to dig further into it. It is only Tuesday afternoon. I will probably spend much of Wednesday evening looking at Louisville play-by-play this season to decide, do I still hate this offense? One offense I don't hate. One offense I don't think you are capable of hating is Penn State's. Hosting Illinois this week, Penn State an 18-point favorite. James Franklin has finally gotten out of the way of an offensive coordinator, and it is fun to watch. Andy Kotelnicki, former Kansas offensive coordinator, he's really cooking, and it's become one of my favorite things. Illinois relied on gifts from Kansas as Jalen Daniels goes through an identity crisis, relied on Dylan Raiola looking like a freshman against Nebraska. Illinois is not going to get those gifts against Penn State. Kotelnicki's going to have Drew Aller dial it up. I like that. 18-point. On Sunday evening, I took Penn State next 17.5 as one of my Sunday evening picks.
Yeah, I doubted Drew Aller. You know I did as we headed into the season going up against West Virginia. And he's pretty much proven me wrong to this point. When you have that bat, like if Aller can be this guy, this is another team that has national championship aspirations with that defense and the balance of that offense is what makes it so scary with me. When you can run out Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, and then you're like, oh yeah, well now Drew Aller is just zinging the ball down the field too. Like, you're a problem for anybody in the country. That's why this spread is, despite this being a top 25 matchup, that's why this spread is 3 scores and not any lower than that. Obviously Illinois shut down the Nebraska running game, but I don't think they'll be able to do it because they won't, like you said, they won't have the benefit of facing a freshman quarterback in his first real big game of his career. So I'd lean towards Penn State here, but I'm not confident enough at this point to make a best bet on it.
18's a big number. I was glad to get the 17.5. That hook might not sound like much, but we know football scores. 18
number.
Often a margin. Yes, very much a key number. We will inevitably talk about that game more because I'm enjoying the Penn State offense so much. We'll talk about it more live on Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern before week 5 kicks off. I have hopes of getting more than 3 or 4 hours of sleep this Friday night, which should mean our Saturday show will be fresher than ever.
Yeah.
Let's hope.
Please join. Please join. Like I said, the numbers have been great. We really, 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 really are thankful for you guys tuning in. So please, please doing that. Join in the chat. We'll engage with y'all. It's been a lot of fun. So keep doing it.
Now, close listeners have undoubtedly noticed we have not suggested bets on all of these games we've discussed. In fact, we've mentioned bets on only one of them, my Alabama money line plus 110. The biggest games do not necessarily provide the biggest value, and gambling on college football needs to focus on finding value. You've already heard how Andrew's week went. I squeaked out a 4-3 showing plus 0.8 units, getting me to 16-18 on the year, down 3.41. A few more good weeks than bad, and eventually I will forget about my offer in week 0. Now, Andrew, you can be hard on yourself, but let's remember, I went 0-4 in week 0, and I'm still fighting my way back from that.
Well, my hole is deeper than yours now. 1-6 last week, and for it is a total of negative 5.73 units. So if you guys want to fade me this week, I would not blame you for doing that. But like I said, we're going to bounce back here, start with some winners, keep the process right. So we're going to start with James Madison, JMU, the Dukes, to cover a 20.5 point spread versus one of the worst teams in the country, Ball State. We're going to talk a little more about Ball State. They're very important to our betting lives here this season. But James Madison, obviously coming off a crazy 70-50 win over North Carolina as 10.5 point underdogs. Game was pretty much over at halftime. There was a few, like, North Carolina made a bit of a push, but every time they did, James Madison answered. Interesting part of that game, I thought, was that they kept their starters in most of the game, which is something I like when you're laying 20.5 points in a game against a lesser opponent here. But on top of that, I'm just also really impressed with the job that Bob Chesney has done with this James Madison team to go 3-0, considering, especially with a game against North Carolina. Like, that's not a joke win, especially when you consider all of the roster turnover that the Dukes had to deal with this offseason. I just am really impressed with the job he's done at this point. What also makes me happy about laying this number, I know it's a big number and you might disagree with me a bit on it, but they're running the ball almost 60% of the time. So offenses that are running the ball 60% of the time are going to keep running the ball 60% of the time if they're up by 30 or if the game is close. Like, that's what they're going to do. So that is one of these things that gives me confidence in this bet. And then there's Ball State. Oh goodness. Thank you for being here, Ball State. We can drop 134. They rank 134 in the country in opponents' yards per rush, giving up 9 yards per carry right now this season against FBS opponents. So James Madison is going to run the ball a bunch and Ball State is not going to stop them. They're going to cover this big number.
Did you say 9 yards per carry allowed?
9 yards per carry against FBS opponents.
Now we're talking like traditional football where you need 10 yards to get a first down.
Correct. Almost a first down every time someone runs the ball against Ball State is a first down.
You know, I had all sorts of thoughts of like, maybe this line got too big, but no, you go and say that. And I look at Parker's numbers and he has James Madison as a 38.5 point possible favorite.
No, he doesn't.
38.46. Now that's including some 2023 data involved, but that those numbers are getting pretty big. That I won't disagree with you. I'll just point out that after this weekend, Vanderbilt broke your heart, taking Missouri to overtime. More and more, though, we have confidence that Vanderbilt's going to get that over 2.5 season win total, probably by beating Ball State on October 19th. Right now, the Commodores would be maybe north of a 3-touchdown favorite. We'll take that. We will enjoy that moment when that moment comes.
It's a big number. It is a big number.
It's a big number.
And if you feel that it's inflated because of that UNC win, that's fair. But like I said, I like the style of offense they're running and the way they kept the starters in that game and Ball State. Whew. They bad.
You're basing a good amount of that on fading Ball State. If I may tail that thought process here to kick somebody when they're down, I don't kick you when you're down. I kick Purdue when Purdue is down because Purdue is bad. Everybody, yes. I want you to understand. Purdue is bad. Technical term is bad. That's why I'm taking Nebraska as a 10-point favorite, available at neg 108 at DraftKings. The biggest piece for me in this game is Nebraska's defensive line. We saw Notre Dame harass Hudson Card into an abysmal performance 2 weeks ago, and he responded at Oregon State by going 7 of 17 for 56 yards and a touchdown. Well, I guess you could say two touchdowns because they threw an interception returned for a touchdown. Hudson Card is not faring well, and it's because his offensive line can't protect him, and he does not handle pressure well. Nebraska's defensive line alone is edge enough here for me to trust. It might shut out the Boilermakers. Nebraska's defense might outscore Purdue's offense. Any version of that is going to make me comfortable at neg 10 for the big go big red.
Yeah, it's I am in total agreement with you. I almost made this a bet as well, so we're in pretty much lockstep here. I think that it's going to be a tough day for Purdue again. They're just going to get run all over. I think Nebraska is going to be ticked off about how they were so unsuccessful running the ball against Illinois. So they're going to just pound it down their throats against a team. Here's another team that gives up almost a first down per opponent rush. It's 7 yards per carry for Purdue. So
it's just not okay. Purdue is really bad, and really it's bad. In the trenches. They have failed in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and I'll fade you as often as I can when that's the case.
Exactly. We should make a segment called They Bad.
I think you're about to hit a third straight They Bad.
They Bad. Houston, They Bad. I'm taking Houston to go under their team total of 13.5. You can get that at even money at Bet365. I really, really like that. We talked about fading Houston after that loss to UNLV to start the season, and this looks like as good a spot as any to fade the Cougars here. This Houston offense is pretty terrible. They rank 107th in offensive success rate. Here, let's bring up real quickly their scoring output so far this season. They scored 7 points against UNLV. They scored 12 points against Oklahoma. They did put up 33 against Rice, but then they got shut out against Cincinnati, another team that they might not be in the they bad category, but they ain't great either. So, yeah, it's been a real struggle for Houston this season. Iowa State's defense is obviously one of its strengths. I really think that they will limit them in this game, and I just don't see a world in which Houston gets two touchdowns in this matchup. So under the team total, love it at the even money here. I have seen a 14.5 out there, but it was juiced at like -136. I think that was over at FanDuel. But I think the general line here has been 13.5 across the board. So if we can find that at even money, then sign me up any of the day of the week.
I can't get over getting shut out by Cincinnati, because Cincinnati is, I mean, that's a program with no direction. That's a program with a lot of troubles, and they get to take it to Houston. It makes me wonder what Willie Fritz did to upset Dana Holgorsen that he was left with this abysmal of a roster. I say that obviously they don't know each other that well, if they know each other at all, but that's what it feels like, that Willie Fritz just was handed this disaster, and now it's on his record. It is too bad. We're going to stay in the Big 12. I am going to shock everybody by backing Utah. This is a Utah pod. I'm taking Utah by 11 against Arizona. Neg 110 at Caesars. Now, I don't expect Cam Rising to play. Not that anyone has any idea. Kyle Whittingham doesn't know. Maybe it's an astrology thing. Do you know what Whittingham's sign? Obviously, I'm joking, but it's gotten to that point. This is a bet on the Utah defense, the Utah defense we were praising earlier. Arizona's offense has become a one-trick operation. Noah Fifita throws the ball up to McMillan, and that's it. McMillan has 453 receiving yards this season. No one else in the Arizona roster has 100. He has 4 touchdown grabs. No one else has 2. Utah's going to scheme him out of the game entirely.
Oh.
And that alone makes it so I think that one of us could quarterback Utah to 20 points to easily cover this spread. I say that, and I know that you don't have that strong of an arm, and I'm not very mobile, but one of us could probably quarterback
Utah. How am I taking shots for not having a strong arm? Come on.
It's a Tuesday, which means it's a day I'm going to take shots at you. This is our relationship.
Oh, my goodness. It is. Yeah, no, I'm once again, this is a Utah pod, so I watched every snap of that Kansas State-Arizona game a couple weeks ago, and it just, they, Kansas State made some really good adjustments in that game. They knew that McMillan was going to beat them every now and then, but they literally took everything else away. And it was a real struggle for an Arizona team that was only able to score 7 points in that matchup. So I have Utah's defense obviously graded as much higher as Kansas State's. So yeah, it's going to be a tough night for Fafita and the Wildcats.
You have one more bet for your Tuesday. And again, your Tuesday last week by the numbers looked great. So I'm going to believe in your Tuesday bets today.
Yeah. So today, my Tuesday bet, my final Tuesday bet, I'm going with UNLV -3.5. They're taking on Fresno State. This is a pretty good Mountain West conference, but I'm going back to something that I've had a little bit of faith in the past. And this UNLV team has gotten to be undefeated at this point in the season, which includes a pretty good win over Kansas, by running the football a lot. Like, almost service academy a lot. They are running the football 76% of the time through the season at this point, which I found interesting because they obviously have Ricky White, who went for almost 1,500 yards receiving. And through three games, I think he's got something like 120 yards at this point. Maybe they're just, like, we've talked about guys waiting to use their guys in certain schemes. Maybe this is the Ricky White game, but I don't know. Fresno State, I'm basing this handicap mostly on Fresno State. They gave up 150 yards rushing to Michigan, a team that's very dedicated to running the ball. They lost that game 30-10. Obviously, UNLV is not Michigan when it comes to terms of defensive talent, but they've shown that they're a very good defense at this point. They also just, Fresno State just gave up almost 500 yards of offense to New Mexico, which would be alarming if I was a fan of Fresno State. So I really think this number is a little too low. I think Fresno State is getting a bit extra respect for the fact that they've been one of the Mountain West darlings over the last few years. Obviously a well-coached team, but I think UNLV is a very well-coached team. I think that they'll lean on that running game, and I think we'll see like a little like trickery, not trickery, but like maybe a little more scheming for Ricky White in this matchup. Like, aha, we finally released Ricky White in this matchup. So yeah, let's go UNLV -3.5 in this matchup.
I like it. I especially love you comparing them to a service academy. They're running the ball as often as you said, and it's just consistently running the ball, but with no explosives. They rank 117th in success rate. Excuse me, am I reading this right? I might have flipped that. They're doing very well explosives. They beat you into the ground with the run until they break one loose. And that is one, yeah. That is the prototypical service academy aspect. That's what we enjoy. Now, we're going to finish off our Tuesday bets before we bring in Parker Fleming for a little bit of chaos, as we like to do on Tuesdays. I teased this earlier. I'm going to keep my faith in USC's defense by doubting Wisconsin's offense, taking a Wisconsin team total under 16.5. That is also even money available at FanDuel. You heard me diminish Michigan's offensive output last week. That was explicitly also praise of USC's defense. The Badgers do not have the physical run game the Wolverines do. And that may sound sacrilegious to any old-fashioned Wisconsin fans, not fans of Wisconsin old fashions. That's Brandy. I'm talking about Ron Dayne and running the ball. It is still a truth that Wisconsin's not doing it. Bucky's rushing attack is struggling, succeeding more than half the time, but never breaking big plays. The big plays are the USC worry. We saw that last week. Without that stressor, I think the Trojans defense should excel, particularly since Wisconsin is now without quarterback Tyler Van Dyke. I refuse to overreact to USC giving up three big plays. I will lean the opposite way and keep faith in the Trojans.
Like it. I like it. They, like you said, they got beat on some bad tackling on a couple of plays. So they tighten that up. Then they've obviously made some strides on that side of the ball.
They have. Now, knowing him, he's going to find a way to disagree with me. If not disagree with me, disagree with one of your plays. Let's grab Parker Fleming, our good friend at StatsOWAR on Twitter. He is always good for some chaos. Parker, how the heck are you this Tuesday?
Doing great. How's it going with y'all over here?
Depends on which one.
It was a rough week for me. My bankroll is not happy.
Yeah. It happens. I was 0 for 4 2 weeks ago. Knew I didn't like the board. Tried to come up with some value. Had nothing. And then last week I roll into 5-1 on my Wednesday plays. And honestly, I had Mike Gundy as a dog. I would have had a really special weekend if that had come through for me. So ebbs and flows, my friend. Ebbs and flows, right? Right. We're never as bad as our worst weekend, and we're never as good as our best weekend, which is kind of fun of the process. I certainly suppose
we might be kicking you off the show if you went against Utah last week. What do you? Come on now, Parker.
I liked Gundy at home, and I feel like it was the right side. And then Gundy just did, they just did their whole thing. What's up with Ollie Gordon and the rushing offense, man?
That's
like
what we were just talking about.
I looked
that.
At this. He was last season, 2.5 yards before contact on average. This season, it's about 0.5. So there's some schematic issue that's not going great there.
That's worse.
That's not where you want to be, per se. So yeah, don't love what I see out of Oklahoma State. They got to figure out what they're going to do. The defense is improving though. I think kind of weird. Like they're giving up more quality possessions. I didn't even plan to talk about Oklahoma State. I've just had a lot of caffeine and that's kind of where we went, but like they've given up more quality possessions than they did last year. But they're giving up fewer points per quality possession because they're not giving up these big disaster touchdown plays. And you're like, okay, that's improvement overall. But looks like the offense, even with all that experience, can't really do very much overall. So I'm kind of out on them after they burned me last week for sure.
What did you plan on? What chaos did you plan on bringing into us today?
All right, I got a couple that I think are interesting. I'm not believing the Temple resurgence. I think rumors of Temple being great are maybe not there. I think Army is absolutely a wagon in the run offense that they can put together. I can absolutely see a world where Temple is an absolute hell here and Army can just run. Temple, as soon as they bring somebody up, Army can hit the big play. Army's super explosive this year in the pass game. They're very, 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 very selective, even on Army's terms. But I like this. I mean, I've got this close to 3 touchdowns. So I like this up anywhere through some of those key numbers above where it is right now. But looking at, I think 13.5, I saw this morning was where I've locked that in on Betstamp. So that's one that I'm definitely in on. I heard you guys touch on UNLV. I like that one a lot. I think my Galaxy brain take here is that last season UNLV played their cards the entire season, and then they got up against Boise and they had no more cards to play. And so this offseason, they took a very dramatic approach to say, hey, we're going to emphasize the run. We're going to win the games we should. And we're not going to show all these looks of, hey, here's triple, here's motion, here's all this, you know, nonsense of how we're going to get Ricky Wright these explosive plays so that in the big games, when SHIT hits the fan, we have another dimension to go to. I wonder if there's not some of that at play there. So even if Mikey Keen and the Fighting Fresno Bulldogs can get them into a kind of shootout match, I still think they're prepared to access that other dimension and play pretty well there. So I'll take UNLV as a favorite there. I'm a little chalky this week, which is never my favorite thing in the entire world. But let's talk Penn State and let's talk Illinois. I think that I'm actually on Illinois as a dog here, just from some pace issues. Which I believe is different than Douglas's chicken scratch yellow legal pad that he texts me every week. And I say, Douglas, no one can read this. This looks like what a serial killer puts his picks on every week. But,
see that
you know, still happens. I don't know if you got to walk through the, there it is. So looking at this, I think there's a couple interesting things here. One, Illinois' offense only slightly rushing more than passing. I have them at 67th, right about even at rush rate over expected. Penn State's defense, they're getting rushed against a ton, 114th overall. I would rush against them too. I want to avoid that pass rush, right? And want to mitigate that. So there's already a reason for the pace to be slower and Illinois to try to control the tempo. We know that Penn State's going to be super explosive. They're third in EPA per dropback. They're 27th in rushing, second in rush in dropback success rate on offense. So they are very efficient. They are very explosive. Illinois is going to want to slow this game down. Penn State's still running a whole lot, 3.3 percentage points above average. And so it's 85th in the nation. I think that we get a pace argument here where Illinois plays a very frustrating brand of football. Penn State is their usual brand of explosive, but they cannot separate. I don't think this is the same thing as the Nebraska game where Illinois legitimately frustrated Nebraska and Nebraska couldn't do what they wanted. I think this is Penn State get close to the number and then cruise. And Illinois with the pace issue is going to be able to keep this close. So I'm in on Illinois as a dog here. I've got this a lot closer than the line so far.
You make a very good argument there, but I have one counter because, as you know, I did make this one of my Sunday evening plays with Penn State at 17.5. I've got James Franklin, and we all know James Franklin knows the number. We all know if James Franklin has a chance to cover in the fourth quarter, James Franklin has a track record of covering in the fourth quarter. You want to talk about serial killer tendencies, doing that over and over and over again, sometimes covering 40. James Franklin has shown this.
So what I took away from this conversation, Parker, is that maybe the under doesn't look like a terrible play if pacing is going to be an issue as well.
I like that. I like that too. The only reason I'm a little bit scared off an under is that
the explosiveness.
Just Penn State's really good at finishing those drives, and so like they get those seven, you know, and all that. But again, I think that that's a pretty good. I think that's another good lean. I've got this at 48. I don't know what it is. I have 48.
I think it's at 48 and a half. So
that's super high for me. I feel like that's way too high. So yeah, I think they could absolutely go under. Another one, if I want to be chalky here and still take a dog. Talk me out of Alabama money line. Why is that not what I want to hold here? I phased out my preseason priors a little bit. I'm still retaining some of that. Georgia's offense has not looked good. It is a case where Georgia's offense was able to thrive on Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers last year, and they just haven't figured out how to thrive yet. And I don't feel like Alabama's the time to do it. Alabama's offense looks absolutely ruthless. Their defense is first in EPA per dropback. I think they can make Carson Beck uncomfortable. I think Carson Beck is not very comfortable with his progressions and his check down options and his if-thens this season. I could absolutely see a world where, I have Alabama's the favorite. I don't even see a world. I think Alabama's the better team right now. So if you can get them plus points, great. You want to go money line and get some of that there? Let's do it. I think Kalen DeBoer is a winner. And I think this is one of the most consequential football games that we will see in our lifetimes in terms of what the new era of success in the landscape of football looks like. If Kalen DeBoer comes in and beats Kirby Smart the first year, that's shockwaves. Like, that's absolutely amazing for what the post Saban era looks like. And, is pretty incredible. That being said, Kirby comes in and drops him, you know, puts 30 on him, and we think, okay, we're not changing the landscape. We just have a new Saban, right? That's what I feel like is at stake this week in a lot of ways.
That the most consequential game in college football.
One of.
Get out of here, Douglas. Come on. I love that take. I love it. No, it's going to be a fun game.
You know, I love it because Parker, for those who don't realize, Parker jumps into our studio about 2/3 of the way through the show. And while he could look to see what our bets have been, I don't think he usually does. I led the show off today, Parker, with Alabama moneyline plus 110 at DraftKings, mostly because Georgia's offense, I think it's trading on its past reputation, which it earns that reputation. Absolutely. But it's the past. And right now, like you said, Carson Beck is struggling to find his rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, what does it come down to? Before this season, if any situation I could get plus money on a Nick Saban team, you want to take it, right? And we're in this situation here. I'm like, maybe I'm doing that with Alabama and Kalen DeBoer because the athletes are still there. I like them as the underdog. If they were a favorite, I would be absolutely terrified here. But I like them in this underdog spot for sure.
That is welcome news to me. I am always happier when I'm in agreement with Parker because we approach these handicapping thoughts so differently. It's two people getting the same answer on a math test, even though one of them didn't know how to do math. I'm the one who doesn't know how to do the math.
Shocker.
In that case, that means both of us don't know how to do math, but yeah. So there's my three for the week. I honestly should write down which ones I put on the show last week. I don't know if you guys
I will pull those up today and text them to you. You can choose whether you share them with the world.
Only if they're good. Yeah. Only tell me if they're good.
I'll tell you right now that I believe you went 1-2 because you had Nebraska, Colorado, and TCU. And I don't remember how that TCU game ended. Do you have any idea?
Man, dude, they got the absolute yips over there in Fort Worth, man. Like they got smacked in the mouth and immediately crumbled. Like just incredible. Sonny Dykes bailed at halftime so he could go sit in the shade. I mean, like, it was just absolutely brutal.
It's going to be a fun trivia question 20 years from now. Name the first two coaches to be ejected for getting multiple unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. Sonny Dykes was the second. Can either of you tell me who the first was? Scott Leffler out of Bowling Green once upon a time. This is what we're here for. We discuss 134 teams. This is the entire premise.
I was going to guess Fran McCaffrey, but I don't think that's the right category for that's a good college basketball joke. For as little as I know about college basketball, that's very funny. I'd like credit for
that. We're proud of you. We're so, so proud of you. We'll let you go out on a high note like that. Thanks for jumping in, Parker. We'll see you next week.
Catch you next week.
Andrew, that should about do it for us. We again need to remind the world we'll be live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. Like and subscribe to College Football 134 to show us you were getting the Tuesday value long before that Saturday show, and so you get the notification on the YouTube to jump in. I guarantee, I'm going to say guarantee, of our 7 bets today, at least 2 will have good value come Saturday morning that you only get by listening to the Tuesday show. Andrew, what were some of your 7 bets today? You had only 3.
I had 3 today. We're going with James Madison minus 20.5. And we're going with Houston team total under 13.5 going up against Iowa State, and UNLV minus 3.5 against Fresno State.
I am in with 4 because I could not stay away from that Alabama money line. Alabama plus 110.
I might have to tail you on that too. That's now that Parker's. I don't know, just the Carson Beck stuff. It's interesting. If he can't make those progressions, it's really starting to be like, oh, should I just bet this? Like, oh.
In the piece we didn't get into with Parker that I mentioned earlier, Georgia is succeeding in only 37% of its rush attempts, number 103 in the country. That makes Beck's life that much harder. Yeah. That makes it that much more of a struggle for this offense to find his needed rhythm. Alabama plus 110 money line. I won't be shocked if by Saturday that is a pick 'em. I also have Nebraska by 10 at Purdue, Utah by 11 against Arizona, and the Wisconsin team total under 16.5 against the mighty USC Trojan defense. Defense that I refuse to quit on. Andrew, I think that does it for us.
Well, thanks for not kicking me off the show. I appreciate it. And
can you win multiple bets this week, please? That we're is gonna, Andrew Cayley. Andrew Cayley at Covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer at D_Farmer. We will see you early on Saturday morning.